south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
Yep, getting more and more flack about this Mexican tourist visa stuff. You know what I'm talking about. I mentioned it in the last couple of shows. Getting lots of emails and complaints about that. Then again, for people who listen to this show, I can hardly have sympathy for you when you complain about Mexico cracking down when I've been saying for the last 11 years on this show, almost 12 now. You've got to go for residency in whatever Latin American country while the getting is good. I hate to say I told you so, so I'm not going to say it. But when you're caught in the middle of a visa snafu like so many people are, especially in Mexico now, don't you think it would have been prudent to just apply, get it over with? Especially you gringo guys and gals who own property down there or who've got a long-term rental. And for you new listeners out there who aren't up to date on the situation, let me highlight this with a few excerpts from an article that just came out. This comes courtesy of the English language news rag called Mexico News Daily. Have you heard of it? It's a must-read for gringos and expats in Mexico because it's got all the latest dope in English. And only about 1 in 100 gringos in Mexico can speak Spanish well enough to have a decent conversation with their cleaning lady. But you knew that already, right? The title of this article pretty much says it all. Title? A Mexican visitor's permit no longer guarantees you an 180-day stay. With a subtitle sidebar that says, with some travelers given less than 30 days at the immigration person's discretion. Let me read just a little bit of this, and I'll paraphrase. It says, once it was all but guaranteed that a visitor entering Mexico, a U.S. visitor, would receive a permit to stay for 180 days, it was automatic. Most would always get this 180 days, the maximum length of time allowed under current Mexican immigration rules. But with the current immigration caravan panic and crisis, many aspects of the current immigration policy have been changed over just the past few months, with more and more travelers reporting they were allowed 30 days or even less to complete their travels in Mexico. Then it says immigration agents will also ask visitors for documents like hotel reservations, return flight data, and prepaid tour bookings to prove that the purpose of the visit is actually what the visitor is claiming. That is, it is strictly a vacation or tourism visit. Then it says, for example, Guy Korchesny, a Mexico City-based recruiter of foreign English teachers who also works on immigration issues, says that he gets at least 20 calls a day from gringo visitors claiming that they expected to get approved for the usual 180-day stay but received as few as 10 days with no recourse to extend the permit. He goes on to say, earlier this year, one of the best options for gringos and expats coming with expired documents was to get temporary residency through a pandemic amnesty program. But that program was for people whose travel documents expired, but only if they were issued prior to 2019. More recent arrivals do not qualify for that emergency program. Then it says, many Americans have flocked to Facebook to discuss the changes and share their personal experiences and disasters, though the majority report they still are receiving the standard 180-day visa. Still, many are reporting they're receiving less than that and have been frustrated by reports that many of the local immigration offices no longer give out extensions for any reason. Some travelers have even said that they've been advised by travel agents and immigration agents to overstay their permits and pay for a new one at the airport, along with a fine once they leave. Though this may be feasible for some, the option presents the risk of detention and deportation if at any point authorities ask undocumented travelers to prove they are legally in the country. In other words, some might get away with it, some not. There are even reports, for example, that people who arrive in Cancun for a 15-day vacation, and after leaving the airport, once they arrive, they check their documents, they find the immigration officer has only given permission to stay in the country 10 days. So what do you do then? Well, you're going to get fined when you leave, which was really not an issue in the past, but now there'll be a black mark in your record in the computer files forever, which may in the future prevent you from ever getting into the country again. Meanwhile, we've got this report from an underground listener in Mexico who doesn't have residency, but has been living there for years now with his wife. He's a guy that's very used to doing border runs every 180 days, you know, to stay legal or quasi-legal. He's been doing it so long he's developed a pattern of hacks that until now have worked well for him and his wife, sometimes involving small bribes, you know, mordida, at the border. I've been there. Over the years, I've dished out a few $100 to immigration slugs at various borders myself. Hey, if you've lived down here long enough and don't have residency in any particular Latin country, you'll identify with this. Though what you're going to hear now from Mr. G in Mexico about immigration changes, he does admit his personal hacks have a shelf life that won't last forever. In fact, he just did a successful Mexican tourist visa border run to Guatemala and back. And here are some of the more interesting highlights of that trip. He says, Johnny, I just made my usual Oaxaca to Guatemala drive and it was business as usual. And I got my new 180-day visa at my particular favorite lax and lenient crossing. At Talisman, just north-northeast of Tapachula. And as usual, he says, the same happy-to-get-his-bribe-money Guatemalan immigration guy and the Mexican immigration folks were casual as usual. And there were even some Guatemalan truckers who bought me breakfast at a mom-and-pop shop on the Guatemalan side. Most people are very nice and way cool. However, on the immigration front, things are changing. And what was different this time was the Mexican immigration guy asked how many days I wanted rather than the usual automatic 180-day stamp. So I trotted out my well-rehearsed age-old tale of the old retired surfer dude in a van living on the Pacific, and that seemed to be fine for them this time. But just a word of caution, the Talisman border stop is one of the most lenient laid-back crossings, and this may well be the very last time I get my magic 180-day dream stamp. So definitely time to plan ahead and probably head further south of the border. Oh, and Johnny, another usual item on my fun run down the steamy Mexican coastal highway was that I encountered the same particular band of about 10 crooked Federale cops who set up roadblocks about 100 miles off the border near the Chiapas-Oaxaca state line. It was early Sunday morning and I was driving home. And almost at the very same spot they nicked me for a bottle of tequila a few years back, they sized me up and told me to pull off the road for a routine inspection. You know what that means, right? Yep, more DITA time. As I was pulling off, I said to myself, these guys are not getting any money out of me. Not this time. And believe it or not, it turned out to be the same feral, orc-like slime ball in charge who nicked me the last time. So according to him, we were old buddies. And he immediately told me his name was Arturo and gave me a friendly fist bump. Meaning, nothing to worry about, we're cool buds routine. Deja vu all over again. But this time, I never cracked a smile. I dredged up the most formal Spanish I could manage and put on what my wife calls my junior high school principal's face and said no to his request for some cigarettes and coffee, which I have to assume stifled any more expensive requests. All the while, I was cocking my head to keep an eye on his partner, who was sifting through my van accessory box way in the back. Then Arturo, the guy with the weird orc ears, wanted to search my backpack, and I said I'd show it to him myself, and I did so. Well, in the end, they let me go, and the aged gringo hooted his delight as I pulled out unscathed this time, since it easily could have gone the other way. All right, me, Johnny, just a little side note. Personally, I'd say he got off easy. Tis the season, you know. We're right around Christmas time, the holidays. This is the time the cops press you hard and heavy for bribes and are not ashamed to give you the line that it is Navidad, you know, Christmas time. And that means every gringo they stop should be in the Christmas spirit. Ho, ho, ho. After all, the cops do need to give presents to their wives, children, and mistresses. Yes, it's true, even cops on their piddly salaries have mistresses. Now, they don't have separate families living in separate houses that they support. They don't make that kind of dough. But everyone I've ever met is married with kids and does have a mistress or girlfriend somewhere, sometimes more than one, often in different towns, which makes it easier to pull off. And sometimes, you know, after giving a little thought to this, I can see why they're always asking for bribes and mordida. Imagine juggling a wife, kids, family, and a mistress or two on the average cop salary of around $500 to $600 a month. Yep, they make around twice the average grunt or minimum wage salary. Though 10 or so years ago, they only made around $300 to $400 a month, slightly more than minimum wage. And because of all the citizen complaints and gripes about cops being lazy-ass slugs always asking for money, by consensus, almost all Latin American governments figured if the cops made more money, maybe they'd actually work and quit asking for bribes. So, as a result, just a few short years ago, country by country, all the cops got a raise, and their salaries practically doubled overnight. And everyone was happy for about a month or two. But as you well know, human nature is, well, human nature. And expenses always seem to slightly exceed income, no matter how much you make. Isn't that funny? So the result of that experiment? Well, the cops remain slugs as lazy as they ever were, and they still hit people up for bribes, especially around Christmas. So let me warn you, be on the lookout. In the month of December, you're about twice as likely to get hit up for bribes, mordida. Always with a smile, or mostly with a smile, in the guise of a Christmas donation. And they'll ask you with genuine smiles on their faces. It's happened to me a number of times. But back to Mr. G's email. He says, Johnny, what marred an otherwise spot-on successful visa run was getting home and hearing that our friendly neighborhood garbage man got shot 4 times, even once in the forehead, while intervening in a fight his wife was having with a hot-headed neighbor. So we have to line up a new garbage guy. Yeah, I know, it sounds callous, and actually our little enclave of gringos here in the off-the-gringo trail camp is collecting money to help him stock up on colostomy bags. Ouch. And the moral of that story? I think you know the moral. Don't be a hero, don't do a John Wayne and step into a local argument. And Johnny, I know all this and 2 pesos will buy a cup of coffee. Well, used to buy a cup of coffee. So it's time to sign off. But it looks like I will be heading to Guatemala soon myself. Going north to the USSA seems lunacy right now, and after being here in Mexico 8 years, who wants to go back to that emerging medical police state? So, Johnny, best wishes, happy holidays, and glad you're laden with stem cells now. As for me, I'm 5 weeks post-stem cell injections myself and feeling definite progress so far. Though I know they say it takes usually 3 months to get full regeneration after stem cells. We'll keep you posted. By the way, I do agree, Puerto Vallarta is a dump. Anyway, Senor Johnny, vaya con queso. Well, thanks for that, Mr. G. Always appreciate good boots on the ground intel. By the way, Mr. G said he agrees that Puerto Vallarta is a dump. Now, that all depends on your definition of a dump, because it's not a dump in the traditional sense. That is, stuffy, dirty, putrid, or offensive visually or to your olfactory apparatus. It's just like Cancun, overrun with gringos. And to the uninitiated, that might sound fine. However, it comes with a hefty price, monetary and otherwise. That means first world expensive, very hefty real estate prices, and worst of all, they've molded it into their cockeyed version of the tropics. That means, for one thing, all the medium, low, and high-end franchises and strip malls are everywhere, along with the Rolls-Royce, Lamborghini, and Maserati dealerships. I kid you not. Personally, I wouldn't live there for anything. But it is a great place to go for a short vacation and get your stem cells done. By the way, speaking of gringos piling into certain cities, especially in Mexico, beware of smiling, happy gringo real estate guys trying to get you in on a good deal. I can't give you a strong enough warning about this. I've known so many gringos and expats who've been ripped off in real estate scams. Hey, early on, I almost got sucked in myself. Though in every single case I know, it's been on the gringo tourist trail. I've never known a gringo or expat to get ripped off in a real estate deal off the trail. I'm sure there have been cases, but I haven't heard of any personally. Not as long as you have a Latin lawyer independently check out the title at the municipality. Though that's not to say you won't get ripped off in a rental contract, but that's not like getting ripped off when you're actually buying property. If you somehow ended up with a bad rental contract, then you might be on the hook if you want to leave or get out from under it before it expires. That's not good, but it's not the end of the world. Oh, and I know lots of gringos and expats who've lost their rental deposits. That's happened to me a couple times. I always figure here in Latin America, if you get your rental deposit back, consider it a gift. It's like lending money to family or friends. If you get it back, consider that a gift too. But if you buy into some fake or unbeknownst to you bankrupt land or real estate project, or an underfunded one, then man, you could really take a hit. So why am I mentioning this now? Because there's so much of that going on, especially in 2 places, Costa Rica and Mexico, with Colombia and Panama tied for 3rd place in that hall of shame. And these gringo ripoff scenarios exactly track the flow of gringos into certain districts and areas. The more gringos, the more real estate ripoff scenarios. For example, just received a report the other day about some really nasty real estate scams going down in San Miguel Allende. I'm sure all you guys and gals who've been in and out of Mexico know about that place. It's high-end, loaded with gringos. Again, a beautiful place, but I'd never want to live there. Now, I've known about this and other scams for a while now, but I thought this would be a good time to mention it since listener Greg sent me this urgent real estate fraud article, heads up. This new article coming from the local newspaper, the San Miguel Post. I'll read some highlights here, just enough to scare the hell out of you. It starts off by saying, in San Miguel de Allende, a horrible fraud scheme is happening and people are being left without money or a home. It's happening in condo developments that use heavy promotion in billboards around the city. Sellers collecting payments from buyers without delivering. Then it says, today is the first of a series of articles on different real estate scams happening right now in San Miguel de Allende. The following information is publicly available in the public registries in San Miguel and the court notice boards if you care to check. Then it says, for the last 20 years, San Miguel de Allende has changed more than any other city in the area. From being a charming pueblito, a little town, it has transformed into one of the most profitable real estate markets in the country. Nevertheless, developers are taking advantage of this by defrauding buyers. For example, a very popular development called Artistanto on the periphery of the city. In its original plans, it featured gorgeous common areas surrounded by beautiful townhouses. It sold out fast with pre-sale contracts that demanded buyers deposit anywhere from 20 to 60% down of the full price. Regardless of all the hype, Artisanto hasn't had any real development since the beginning of the project. The lots where most of the homes would have been constructed or had just started being constructed have been broken into. That means little or no security. And construction hasn't even started for the majority of homes that had been sold out. To make matters worse and even more complicated, Artisanto has a mortgage from a Mexican bank that was supposed to be used in the development of the project, but the money was diverted and not used for the stated purpose. As of now, the main mortgage is overdue and the property is in default. But it's not only the main bank pursuing Artisanto, there are 400 defrauded buyers pursuing them too. You heard that right, 400 pissed off owners, most all of them absentee gringos and expats. But sadly, because this is Mexico, many of those gringo buyers who've filed cases in court, their actions have been dismissed for incorrect filing procedures, or because they took too long filing the initial notifications, or they just had a bad or incompetent lawyer who fumbled the ball. Thing is, as it turns out, the real estate agents and developers who sold these properties are still around. Yep, they're still in business. Some of them hawking other similar properties. They claim there are solutions, but the solutions will be more costly than the problems. In other words, the owners, or supposed owners, are being asked to kick in even more dough because the developers initially underestimated the costs. Then they say they can finally finish the project. Where have we heard that one before? The problem is bankruptcy laws in Mexico are not the same as bankruptcy laws in the States. That's why so many gringos who buy into projects like that, especially gringos and expats who don't speak Spanish, are at a loss in more ways than one. By the way, I'm not saying you should never buy into a project like that. There are lots of good ones out there, but my advice is to never buy into a project unless there's quite a few houses already standing, houses completed. Then you could knock on a few doors and talk to some of the owners. All right, with more of the same, then comes this article from the English language Yucatan Post that covers news up and down the Mayan Riviera, you know, Cancun, Tulum, Playa del Carmen, Cozumel, Meridia, and so on. The title of this article is Buyer Beware, There's Massive Real Estate Fraud Prevalent in Meridia, Yucatan. And here are the highlights. It says the explosive growth of so-called investment lots in Yucatan, primarily targeting Americans, has sparked a discussion about whether the purchase of these lots are a good investment or a monumental fraud. You know the saying, location, 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 with many of these companies in charge of selling the lots, offering properties 10 minutes from the beach or 5 minutes from a large shopping center or mall or university at affordable prices, often with little money down and payment plans by the developer, with the promise to gringos and expats of becoming a profitable instrument of savings and a high capital gain in the very near future. Those are the marketing promises that hook the buyer. But the truth is, these so-called investment lots, according to data collected by reporters from the Central Grupo Mega Media Journalistic Investigation Unit, these properties are in many, if not most cases, old properties located in the middle of nowhere without paved access roads and devoid of basic services like water and garbage pickup. In practice, they're worth nothing, and that's why locals in the know are calling them junk lots. But it's a booming business, the sale of these lots, and their target, mostly absentee American clients. Though it's obvious to local people in the know that the real estate bubble is close to bursting. Meanwhile, local authorities remain passive on the issue, since when lots get developed and sold, they collect municipal taxes on buy and sell transactions. So local government officials don't want to see a slowdown. Oh, and get this. Reporters from Central 9 Television visited several of these investment lots. They estimated that there are more than 40 projects of this type underway in just Meridia alone. TV 9 News reports they are all in effect in the middle of nowhere, far from population centers, far from access roads, and in most cases not paved, with most not having minimal urban services like electricity, drinking water, drainage, garbage collection, and so on. Furthermore, they report that most of the lots are not municipalized. That means they won't be able to receive basic services from the municipalities. To obtain these services without government help, the owners must establish a condominium regimen, though this means paying very high fees for construction and maintenance of services, most of which are not outlined in the original purchase or construction contracts. All right, me and Johnny again. I've seen this so many times. Some developments, to disguise their deficiencies, will raise an attractive front facade with a beautiful guard shack and manicured entrance, often with a wide paved concrete boulevard street running directly down the center of the project for 200 meters or more. That's the hook. Looks great from the road. So prospective clients will drive through, and after they pass through the beautiful entrance arch, there'll be a nice, complete model home or two or three in a nice information and business office. Oh, and they'll have a manicured clubhouse-style pavilion on site, too. One of the ways they hook buyers is offering just 5 or 10% down, with most projects offering their own financing. I say beware of projects where you put down 10% or less and there's no interest on the financing. The thing is, you could find these kind of projects everywhere in Latin America, but 90% of them are in Mexico and Costa Rica, with some of them being referred to as green ecological projects, with many clients, mostly Europeans and Americans, getting hooked on the green thing, and all they end up getting is a lot in the jungle with no infrastructure. But that's not the only way many absentee gringos get scammed. Everybody seems to be looking for a green project that'll kick out a nice rate of return. I'm always getting inquiries from gringos and expats asking me about so-called green projects they're seeing advertised. There are all kinds of agricultural projects out there that promise if you put in 5, 10, or 20 grand, it'll kick out 10, 20, 30% a year. I've seen avocado and teak farms set up this way, coffee and macadamia nut plantations. And you know what? After a few years when they're supposed to be putting out a good return, I don't know if a single one that's turned out as promised. Most of them just go out of business or somehow fade away. Hey, I'm not saying they're all scams, but man, if you get involved in something like that, it's all about due diligence. But basically, buying into a percentage of an agricultural project where you do nothing but put in the dough and expect a big return. Man, I'll tell you, gringos with a few grand are suckers for that stuff. By the way, for all you guys and gals out there who are still dead set on having your plan B in Mexico, I wonder if you're paying attention as to how many gringos have become collateral damage over there, even in the resort towns. Oh, and did you see the recent report that came out from the United Nations Bureau on Disappearances? I didn't even know there was such a bureau. Not that I'm any fan of the United Nations. I think they're a thoroughly corrupt organization. But I don't know if you saw this, but just this Sunday, the president of the UN Committee on Disappearances. How would you like to give a talk about that on your kindergarten kids' career day? Anyway, the report said there's almost a total lack of concern amongst government officials in Mexico concerning abductions and disappearances of people. Data shows in the last couple of years, 95,000 people have simply disappeared without a trace, with new clandestine grave sites turning up almost every week, with about 52,000 cases where bodies have been found but not formally identified due to lack of government manpower. The report goes on to say, drug cartels in Mexico frequently bury their victims in clandestine graves or dismember and dissolve their remains, so bodies will never be recovered or identified. And finally, the report says the situation in Mexico reflects the image of a society overwhelmed by the phenomena of disappearances, government inaction, lack of will, lack of enforcement, and systematic impunity. But hey, let's get that plan B rolling and move to Mexico, huh? Great idea. Meanwhile, back in the altiplanos of Central America, you know, Mexico's not Central America. It's considered North America, like Canada and the U.S. Look it up. You'll see that's true. Anyway, I've been traveling in the last month or so, and had the opportunity, for better or for worse, of taking various kinds of transportation, including the Latin American version of Uber. So just a couple days ago, I got into an Uber, and the driver, a young Latino guy, spoke no English, had just a couple of 2-3 straggly chin hairs you just wanted to yank off. But man, could this guy drive. You heard me say before, you have to be a real offensive driver here in Latin America to get anywhere. If you don't drive offensively, especially in a city, what would normally take you half an hour will take an hour, maybe more. Us gringos and expats learn in a hurry. You drive offensively or you get off the pot and let someone else drive. And when I mention drive offensively, I'm talking about ladies too. You better learn or you'll feel like you're in the center of a constant war. In fact, you are. It's us versus them. It really is. Anyway, I'm in this Uber. The young guy can really drive. Man, you can tell. Some people just have a knack for it. They call it a don down here, D-O-N, if someone has a knack for something. If someone's a great cook, they have a don, D-O-N, for cooking. If someone's an extremely lazy, low-IQ'd slug, he's got a don for government work. I know, it sounds like the Don in Don Corleone. It's the same spelling, but different and similar at the same time. Anyway, this guy had a knack for driving, and he was so calm and collected. One hand on the wheel, he was weaving and threading the needle like I've never seen anyone do it before. Total control, like a Latino Mario Andretti. And normally when guys are driving kind of crazy like that, you get uptight, tense. I do. I even tell drivers to back off, slow down sometimes. But this guy, he was really in the groove, what they call in the flow, right? And for all his recklessness, I couldn't help but admire him. And I asked him how old he was. He said, 22. How long have you been driving? He said, 9 years. I said, whoa, that means you started driving when you were 13? He said, yeah. I said, how long have you had this car? He said, 3 months. And I said, 3 months? How'd you learn to drive so well? He said, well, his aunt has a big cafeteria restaurant, and she has a longstanding government contract to deliver meals to certain government schools. I said, you have a license, I hope. And he said, now, yes, of course. Back then, I didn't have one. I wasn't old enough. Didn't need one. He said, I learned to drive fast and with food in the back, and that's tricky. You've got stops to make, and you can't let the food hit the floor or you're out of a job. I said, wait a minute. You've been driving since you were 13? Did you ever get in trouble? You must have got pulled over by the cops. What'd you say? He said, yeah, like everyone, I get stopped once in a while. I said, tell me about it. What's your advice to a gringo? He says, you're just extra nice and polite to him. It'll cost you maybe 10 or 20 bucks. Works every time. I tell him I left my wallet at home. Then they know they're going to get a payout. And all the while, I was thinking, what would happen to a 13 or 14-year-old kid driving a car up in the States getting pulled over? The reason why I'm bringing this up is because I just did a phone consult with a guy from Minneapolis. He's a retired county sheriff, and he told me one of the top, if not the very top reason why illegals get caught and deported, up in Minnesota anyway, is when they're stopped for a traffic offense. And if they don't have papers or badly forged papers, they call immigration and deport them. At least they used to do that until Biden came in. And now they impound the car and give the guy a citation and a court date, and they're supposed to show up on their own recognizance. Yeah, right, and that rarely happens. Anyway, he said Latinos who would drive, at least Latinos that had only been in the country for a short time, they'd break all kinds of traffic laws, laws the average American would never try to skirt. He says when there's no cross traffic, they seem to think it's okay to run stop signs and red lights. I wonder, where have we heard that before? If there's no cross traffic, it's okay to go. Because that's how they drive in Latin America. He said they'll whip past school buses, make U-turns where they're not allowed. They're just doing what they did in their home country. Funny thing is, this retired sheriff told me he's got his plan B going and he's going to move to Panama. He's got some retired cop friends down there and he told me he's already made up his mind. Once he gets down there, he's not going to drive.
South of the border. You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.